everybody. How's it going? Hey, thanks, Dean. Appreciate that, man. You guys are doing good? All right, everybody online, if you're doing good, give us a thumbs up. Hey, my name's Kent Wagner. I am the lead pastor here, and I'm so glad that you guys have joined us for worship this morning. I have a question to start off today's service. Are you guys ready for it? Let me hear a woo. Yeah, woo. All right, that's good. Here's my question for you. When you hear the word holy, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? All right, so when you hear the word holy, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? I have to be honest with you. The first thing that came to my mind was holy underwear, all right? My dad always said, don't wear holy underwear, because if you get in a car accident and the paramedics have to take your pants off, they'll see that you're wearing holy underwear. I don't know why that's where his mind went, to holy underwear, but that was the first thing that came to my mind when I thought about the word holy. The second thing that came to my mind was I had this picture of this elderly woman with a craggly old finger pointed in my face, all right? Now, I don't know where that came from. My guess is it's from my subconscious. When I was a little kid and I'd go to Sunday school, I was always the kid that got kicked out in the hallway, and I was in trouble all the time, so I figure I must have had a teacher that looked like that at some point. She was like, yeah, you, Wagner, all right? What is the picture for you? Do you have it in your head? Do you have a picture of whatever holiness looks like? Because here's the deal. This morning, we're going to be talking about holiness, and I have a feeling that for a lot of us, we have a picture that may not be exactly the biblical picture of what true holiness really looks like. All right, so we're going to get into that and talk about it, but it is a topic that I think for a lot of Christians, we don't ever really get into. We don't really deal with it, we don't talk about it, but as you'll see, the scripture that we're going to look at this morning in Ephesians, that we're going to, again, kind of springboard off of like we've been doing all month, is going to talk about this concept of holiness and righteousness. So before we do that, we're going to read Ephesians 4, and I'm actually going to start at verse 22, and then we're going to all together read verse 24. So when I get to verse 24, I'll kind of give you, all right, let's do this. And I want you all to read it out loud with me, okay? Can you do that? Yeah. Yes? All right, give me a little feedback. Can you do that? Yeah. Yes? All right, I love you all. All right, here we go. I had an extra cup of coffee this morning. So have you been memorizing the verse too? I've been working on it. Should I try it from memory? Who says yes? All right, I don't like you all. All right, too bad for you. I'll try. All right, here we go. All right, are you ready? Ephesians 4, I'm going to do 22 through 24. Here we go. Let me look at it. All right. You were taught with regard to your old way of life, to your former way of life. You're taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by deceitful desires. Remember this? I've been working on memorizing it. Hopefully you have been too. To be made new in the attitude of your mind. And here we go, verse 24 all together. Let's put it up on the screen. Are you ready? Put it up on the screen, quick. Here we go. One back. Here we go. Verse 24. And to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Right? We are to put on the new self. So Paul is giving us, remember we talked about this last week, that he's giving us these three steps to a new you. Did anybody else memorize those passages? Let me raise your hand if you memorized it. I'm going to make you come up here and say it, all right? No, I won't really do that to you. That'd be terrible. Here's the three steps that Paul did, all right? Three steps to a new you are easy. There are three steps. The first one is you take off your old self, right? You take it off. We talked about that 3 weeks ago. We talked about how when you take off your old self, you know that when you came to the table of Christ, that old self of yours was being corrupted by deceitful desires. There were things in you that you just knew they were dysfunctional. You knew that they were really full of darkness. So you have to take that off when you come to Christ. And then the second thing he says, be made new in the attitude of your minds. We talked about this last week, about how our world, our culture, we operate by organizing our life around our feelings. If I feel like something is true, then I act as though it is true, right? And so we organize our lives all the time around feelings. And we talked last week about how that doesn't have to be the case, that you could actually organize your life around your will and your ability to choose what your life is going to be. And so we talked about how Paul had this concept that he would take thoughts captive and he would make them obedient to Christ. Remember that? And so if you're somebody who struggles with anxiety and fear, that you would take that anxiety and fear and you would actually take it captive. And this is what it really looks like in practical terms.
You would say, you'd in your prayer time and with your walk with God, when you're feeling anxious, you'd say, God, I'm just feeling so anxious right now. I'm out of control, God. I take those feelings and I make them obedient to you. I recognize that, God, you are in control of everything. And I recognize that I can't control everything. And so right now, God, even though I feel chaotic and I feel out of control, I am going to take that thought captive and I'm going to make it obedient to you. And I'm going to trust you right now. It's funny because we want something so much more. We want like 5 or 6 steps to how to do this. But the reality is, it's just actually doing it. It's actually taking it and making it obedient to Christ. So we talked about that last week. This week, we're going to talk about putting on the new self created to be like God. And do you remember what it was created to be like God in? Righteousness, true righteousness, and holiness. So when I ask you the question, what do you think it means to be righteous and holy? What was the picture that you had in your mind? Did you guys have a picture? What's the picture that you think of when you think of holy? Is it Mother Teresa? You guys remember Mother Teresa? Like this amazing woman goes to Calcutta. If you don't know her story, incredible. She goes to Calcutta. She takes care of the poorest of the poor, these lepers. People have just been literally left in the gutters of the street in India to die. And she would take them and she was this little frail old woman, but she would even pick them up and carry them. And she would bathe them and take care of them. Is it the kind of person who left everything that they had? And they went and they gave it all away and they lived their life. And they're just holy. Is that what you think of when you think of holy? Are you with me that it's that elderly lady with the crinkly old finger and she's pointing at you and every time you do something wrong, she's pointing it out and that's your picture of holy? It's just this old fuddy-duddy who can't ever have any fun and it's stuffy and like, oh, I don't want that. Is that holy to you? What is holy? Is it the pastor? Yeah. Pastor is very holy position, isn't it? Yeah, like he must be. He put the pastor up on a pedestal. I am here to tell you, like, you better get used to this right now. I am not, like, don't put me on a pedestal. I'm just a normal. I told the coffee people earlier that my voice is a little raw because I was yelling at my kids this weekend. And I was like, you guys stop it. They had turned into werewagners. Sometimes our kids turn into werewagners and they just were crazy. And I'd been yelling at them to stop and I lost my voice a little bit, right? Because I'm not perfect. Don't set me up on a pedestal. But is that what your picture of holy has always been? My gut is you have a picture of what holy is. And as we explore today, I think you're going to find that maybe holiness looks a little different than you've always thought. Because in my mind, at least for me, holiness has always seemed like a drag. And I'm just being honest with you. Holiness has always seemed, I think this is why we don't talk about it much in church. Because it feels like it's the thing that sucks all the air out of the room. Like, well, there goes all the fun. Now the holy roller's here, right? And he's going to thump us with his Bible the whole time. It's why when I show up to the party and then somebody says, this is my Pastor Kent, everybody like hides their beers and they stop talking, you know, they stop cussing, right? That's what y'all are like, I have done that before, yeah, right? Listen, there is this reality that when we deal with this concept of holiness, I think a lot of us have a mixed up picture of what it should actually look like. And it feels like this drag to us. But the question that I have, is that the way it's really supposed to be? Is that really the way it's supposed to be? I want to take you for a few moments, if you would indulge me. I want to take you to the life of Jesus because I think asking the question, how did Jesus live out holiness and righteousness, will help us to get a broader picture of what holiness really could look like. If we would look at his life and watch some of the ways he interacted with people and how he dealt with them, maybe we could get a better picture and maybe all of a sudden it would become a lot more clear that holiness really isn't a drag, that it's something entirely different from that. Are you guys good with that? Everybody good with us going on that adventure? Just say yes, Kent. It makes me feel a lot better, all right? Give me a thumbs up online. All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take you to 3 different stories from Jesus' life. You probably know them. You probably heard them a million times. But hopefully, as we explore them through this concept, you'll see Jesus as this holy, righteous person, but who doesn't seem like he's that far off from something that you could be. All right? Makes sense to you? So, first story, we're in the temple with Jesus. He's been teaching. And all of a sudden, there's this crowd of men who start to gather around him, and they've all got rocks with them. They've all got rocks with them. And all of a sudden, there's all this yelling, and there's this dust being stirred up, and this cloud of guys come, and they gather around Jesus, and they bring this woman in front of him. And she looks like her clothes are a little tattered. Maybe she got dressed in a hurry. She has her makeup is no longer where it should be. It's just kind of like slid off her face a little bit. The dust has settled on her face from all of these men stirring up the dust and dragging her through the streets. But there are, if you look closely, you can see little streaks on her cheeks where her tears have just been flowing. She has just been weeping and fearful, like anxiety. They toss this woman like a rag doll in front of Jesus. All of a sudden, you find out what's happening. They bring charges against her. This woman was caught in adultery. Teacher, are you going to do what the law of Moses requires of us to do? You might not know this, but in Leviticus, it does require them that if they find a woman and a man caught in adultery, they're to stone the woman and the man who were caught in adultery. Did you notice the story? Somebody's missing, right? Somehow the guy, he gets a slide. He gets to go free. And there's this poor woman in front of Jesus. And these guys holding rocks. And they want to stone her. Now, when you got stoned back in those days, it was not the kind of stone that we get stoned in America. It was like literally they would take these rocks and they would throw them at you until they hit your head and your body. And finally, your body just gave up and you were dead. Not our kind of stoned. That's the kind of stoned they got back then. And they've got this woman there, and she's in front of Jesus, and they've just presented Jesus with this dilemma. They're testing him. Is he going to obey the law? Is he going to do what Moses said, or is he not? And Jesus does something crazy. You know the story, right? He bends down. I wish I could squat, but I'm a big man, so I'm just going to bend. And he writes on the sand. Nobody knows what he writes. I like to think that he just drew a line. I don't know that that's what he did. Maybe he did or didn't. I don't know. You know the story though, right? Jesus finally, the men keep pushing him and pressing him. This woman, I just picture her like, can you see her? She's weeping and she's crying and she's looking at Jesus and she knows he's a religious leader. He's going to say stone her. And then he just draws. And I see this like perplexed look on her face, like a little glimmer of hope for her, just maybe. Jesus finally, after being pushed, he stands up. You know what he says, right? He says, he who's without sin, why don't you go ahead and cast the first stone? And then Jesus squats back down. One by one, the men drop their stones. It starts with the oldest guys first, you know, because they have had plenty of time to build up a lot of sin. They drop their stones, and pretty soon there's nobody left. And Jesus finally stands up and looks up, and he says, woman, where are they? Is there no one who condemns you? I wish sometimes that you could hear the emotion of people in the scriptures, but there had to be an emotion. Her voice had to be stuttering as she said it. There's no one. No one. And Jesus looks at her and says, then neither do I condemn you. Isn't that such powerful wording? Now here's the beauty of Jesus. He doesn't hide the truth from her. There's full grace in him. Then neither do I condemn you. But do you know what he says right on the backside of that? Go and sin no more. Jesus doesn't just let her escape for it. He forgives her. He doesn't condemn her. He doesn't bring the justice that really he was the only one that could bring. But he also tells her, don't go live in that old lifestyle. Listen, Jesus had every right to cast the stone. But he held back and he offered grace to her, right? He offered grace. I wanted to ask you this question. How many of us in that situation would really truly be able to hold back and not be moved by the pressure and the force of the world around us? How many of us would not be caught up in all of the pressure of all the people who are pushing on us and trying to get us to do things? How many of us, not Jesus? Jesus stands there, straight up, stands against all of this pressure. I want to tell you something. If I had asked a religious person back in those days who was the holy, righteous person in that situation, when they just knew the outset of the story, there's a woman caught in adultery and all these people have gathered around her. Do you know who they'd have said the holy, righteous person was? It would be the person holding the stone. But that's not the picture that Jesus gives us. Jesus puts down the stone and he picks up grace with this woman. I'm telling you, your picture of holiness and righteousness may be askew a little bit. picturing religious activity for what the Bible, you're substituting religious activity for what the Bible considers holiness and righteousness. You see, if you want to know what God is like, right? Because what Ephesians says is that we put on the new self to be created like God in true righteousness and holiness. And so if you're going to be like God, then you have to know who is God, and Jesus was God. So if you want to know what God is like, you look at who Jesus was. And in this moment, Jesus, in all of his moments, Jesus wasn't driven by fear, but he was driven by honoring the Father. That's what Jesus was driven by. He wasn't driven by fear. He wasn't driven by what everybody else thought and the pressures and even the religious people pressures. Jesus was about honoring the Father. He honored the Father. He honored the Father. And that kind of right, I don't know about you, but when I look at that story, I go, man, I love that guy. I love him. Story number two. This comes in Matthew chapter 8. Jesus has been teaching up on this mount. They call it, guess what? The Sermon on the Mount, all right? They had a real good marketing department back then. The Sermon on the Mount. He is teaching on this mountainside, and he gets done. And when he's leaving the mountainside, Jesus comes off the mountain, and he's walking out, and there is this guy there who comes up to him, and he says, Lord, he's got this problem. This guy has this problem. He says, Lord, if you're willing, heal me. Now, what you need to know about this guy's problem is that what he actually had was a disease we call leprosy. It probably wasn't what we consider modern leprosy. It was probably just some kind of skin disease, maybe a fungus on his skin or whatever, but they just kind of categorized that all as leprosy, right? Does that make sense to you? But here's what you need to know about this interaction. This man just broke the social contract. His social contract as a Jewish person who has a skin disease was not to walk up to somebody like Jesus and say, hey, if you're willing, will you heal me? That was not what, he wasn't even allowed to do that. Do you know what he was allowed to do? If Jesus got near him, this guy was supposed to back up from him and just say, unclean, unclean. He was supposed to yell to him and say, let me ask you this question. When you were in elementary school, be honest with me, girls, how many of the boys, did you believe that boys had cooties? Raise your hand. Let me get an amen. Boys have cooties, right? Can I get an amen? Men, come on now. The girls have cooties. Am I right? Yeah? Yeah, we all know girls have cooties. They still do. It's the truth. In this world, they believed that there was this spiritual cooties that people had. And if I got near somebody, who was unclean, had a skin disease or whatever, and I touched that person or they touched me, guess what? Their spiritual cooties, their uncleanness would come onto me. And then I would be defiled. And for the Jewish person, it didn't just mean that they were defiled. It meant they literally couldn't worship. This person would never be allowed to go into the temple and worship God. Why? Because he had to yell unclean, and he was unclean, and he wasn't holy and pure and perfect enough to be in the temple. Not only that, but get this. This guy wouldn't have been able to be near his family. We don't know if he had a wife and kids, but there's a strong likelihood he might have. Can you imagine seeing your family walking across the road, and you see your son, and you're just going, unclean. Son, I want to hug you. You got to stay away, buddy. I can't. Can you imagine living in this universe where nobody could touch you? These guys likely ate just kind of leftover trash that they would find. There was no income. Maybe your family, if you had family who cared about you enough, maybe they left you food and some clothing or blankets or whatever. They oftentimes lived in places like trash dumps. And your whole life was spent walking around just saying, unclean. Unclean, please stay away from me. Unclean, you don't want what I have. Stay away. You don't want this. And this man breaks every social protocol. And he walks up to Jesus and he says, if you're willing, will you heal me? And Jesus, if you know the story, Jesus says, I am willing. Be clean, right? You know the story? I didn't tell you something else that Jesus did. Most people miss this when they read the story. What it says right before Jesus says, I am willing, be clean, it says Jesus reached out and touched him and said, I am willing, be clean. Jesus touched him. I can imagine that moment as Jesus' fingers swept over his shoulder, or maybe it was his chest that Jesus touched. I don't know, maybe Jesus touched his forehead. I don't know what it was, but I imagine that the healing began before Jesus even uttered the words, "I am willing." I believe that as Jesus touched him and Jesus said, "You thought your spiritual cooties would come after me? Guess what? My spiritual cooties are coming after you. Because all of my goodness, baby, it's all for you today." And Jesus reached out and touched him. And when he did, the healing came over the man. And he was made brand new. Listen to me. Jesus cared about not just healing the man's disease, but he wanted to heal his heart too. This man hadn't been touched. This man had been on the outside. And listen to me, Christian. If you let holiness just be about, it's this person who is just holier than thou and they've got it all together and everything's perfect about their life. If you miss the picture of holiness that Jesus had, you will miss all the good opportunities that he puts right in front of you. There are people every single day that God puts in your path who are disenfranchised and marginalized and they're on the edge and society's forgotten about them, or they get made fun of and mocked at work because they're not as smart and they're not as with it. Whatever it is, they're in your family and it's that one cousin that everybody makes fun of and jokes about. And if you don't have one of those cousins, you are probably it, all right? And Jesus was willing to go and heal that man. He didn't just heal him physically. He brought him in with a touch. Good night. Holiness. It's not about this big holier than thou kind of thing. I do all the right things. It is about a person who's willing to go to the lowest of the low and be with them. Just be with them. Third story. This one is an odd one. I have to preface it that way. Jesus is actually in Gentile territory. If you're not a Bible scholar, Gentile just means not Jewish people, all right? So now you know what a Gentile is. He is in Gentile territory, and there is this woman who comes to him. She's pretty persistent. She's a tough woman. She comes to him, and she's there because she has a daughter who is demon-possessed. Now, I don't know what it's like. I can't even begin to imagine what it's like to have a child with some kind of terrible disability or something that rattles their mind and keeps them afraid all the time. But this woman had this child that was like that. And she was desperate for somebody to help. I actually picture her going to her husband and talking to him about this. I can't prove this is what happened, but I could see it happening. I can picture her going and being like, "Honey, I heard that miracle worker from Galilee is here. I'm going to go and see if he'll heal our daughter." Can you picture this instant? Because I picture the husband going, "Babe, come, are you serious? Don't bother that guy. Like, it's fine. Just leave him alone." And she's like, "No, I'm going to." And he's like, "Look, last month it was essential oils. Like, this month it's the miracle worker. Like, let's just get this hocus pocus stuff out. Just stop." And she's like, "I don't care what you say. I'm doing it." Right? Can you picture it? And she takes her daughter and she goes to Jesus. And she comes to him and she says, "Lord, my daughter," and she starts to tell him the story. "I've got this daughter who's demon possessed," and she's telling him. And this is where it's weird, it's odd. Because as she says it, this is Jesus' response. Are you ready? Oh, that was my microphone. 1 second, please. That's not what Jesus actually said. He didn't have microphones. This was Jesus' response. Are you ready for it? She asks him all this, she's, "Heal my daughter, please, Jesus, please. She's demon possessed, please." This is Jesus. It's disconcerting, isn't it? He doesn't answer her. As a matter of fact, he's silent to the point where his disciples come and they give what I think would have been considered the holy and righteous answer of the day for religious people. They come and they say, "Jesus, get rid of this woman. Get her out of here." That's what every other religious person would have said about this woman. She was a Gentile. She did not deserve to be there. They believed they were superior to her. "Get her out of here, Jesus." Jesus stands there. I actually, if you want to know what I think that Jesus is testing her. Or testing, not her, but testing his disciples. I think Jesus is wanting to see, have they picked up on what my brand of righteousness and holiness is? Or are they still buying into the religious view of what righteousness and holiness is. So Jesus baits the hook a little bit. He says, woman, I was sent for the children of Israel. Why would I take bread that was for the children and give it to the dogs? Now that's something religious people would have said at that time. Any Jewish person, they believed that they were superior to anybody who was not Jewish. So they would have said that. You could feel the racial tension in there, right? Like in our, we get it. Jesus says this, and you can see his disciples being like, yeah, that's right. Finally, Jesus, you're like toeing the party line. All right, right? This woman, this is why I think she probably had this argument with her husband, because Jesus says that to her, and she is voracious, man. She's not giving up. And she goes, oh, yeah? Well, at least the dogs underneath the table will eat the scraps that the children won't eat, right? You just picture, like, I love the guts of this woman. She doesn't give up. And this is why I think Jesus is testing his disciples. I wish they'd been a little bit more descriptive, because I think in this moment that there is this glimmer that comes into Jesus' eyes. And I think in this moment, probably his mouth curls up into a smile, because he looks at her and he goes, woman, you have great faith. Your daughter's healed. He wasn't holding back. He was ready to heal her daughter. I think Jesus is testing his disciples and seeing, do they still think this is all about everybody looking morally perfect and right? That's what it means to come into my presence, that you're just, everybody has fixed themselves. I've got everything together, and so I'm finally good enough to be in Jesus' presence. Or do they think it's about somebody who has a humble enough heart to come to him saying, I know you are the only one. And Jesus, guess what he does? He broke every social barrier to bring healing. He broke social barriers. Christians, good night. If you have a racist bone in your body, start to break that. Start to let Jesus break that in you. Good night. Jesus broke those barriers. This woman, it was the same kind of thing that we deal with in our society. And Jesus broke it to bring healing to her, to love her. Man, if you are somebody who, when you're around poor people, you kind of are disgusted by them. Or maybe it's fat people for you. I've had people treat me terribly because of my weight. I don't know what the thing is for you that's the social barrier that keeps you from being able to look at people like humans. Maybe you can't deal with addicts. You had an addict in your family. You just can't deal with it. You're done with them. Maybe it's somebody who identifies with something other than what you identify, and you can't deal with it, and you're going to just hold them back. Jesus never made those things prerequisites for them to come to him. He brought healing to whatever circumstance, wherever people were at. He went to them, and he let them come to him, and he brought healing. He brought healing. And it's tough, not just for the people that I've picked on your little thing, but it's tough for every one of us, because you better believe it. If you come to the table and you bring your old self into this thing called Christianity, it will come into conflict with the person of Jesus. Because guess what? The new self, it's created to be like him. And he held a true righteousness and a true holiness. Listen to this. For Jesus, holiness was about living out the love of God in every interaction. Nothing more, nothing less. Every single time he interacted with a person, he understood that he was living out the love of God in that moment to that person. He was the vehicle for God's love in the world. I didn't say this in the first service, but I think one of the primary ways that God is able to direct humanity is by, you ever dealt with that whole issue of like, do we have free will or is there predestination? You ever had that argument with some, maybe when you're in middle school, you'd be like, dude, what do you think? Is it free will or predestination? You weren't that deep of middle schoolers. I get it. But there, I think how God answers that question is by you and I as Christians saying to him, not my will, but your will be done. Not my will, but your will be done. And all of a sudden, I submit my entire life to him and I say, I want my whole life to be about living for you. It's how Paul could say about you, Christian, that you were to be Christ's ambassadors in the world. You were literally the ones walking around like, don't do this, but it's like you have cards and you're like, hey, did you hear about God's love? Could I just share a little God's love with you? Like, I mean, you can print up cards, but like, it's not near as effective as like actually loving people and living for God in a real, true, righteous, and holy way. This, This is advancing kingdom, the kingdom at its best. It's advancing the kingdom at its very best when you and I are able to really live for God and love people. Listen, most people think that holiness is about what you don't do, right? It's don't act like this, don't say this, don't drink that, right? Don't be around the people who do. Don't. In Kansas, they would say, don't dance, don't cuss, don't cuss, don't chew, don't go with girls who do, or something like that, right? Yeah, you ever heard that? I obviously didn't listen very well. True holiness is this. It's found when your whole life is caught up in trying to please God by living for him. By living for him and loving people. That's what true holiness really is. And I'll tell you this. Holiness, what I found in my life is it isn't a drag. It's not a drag. It's actually this relief. It is a relief to not feel like I have to be the judge of every single person that's out there in the world. And like, I have to be better than them, and I have to have all my ducks in a row constantly, and I have to be perfect all the time. It is a relief that I'm just living for God, and I'm loving people, and I'm every single human interaction that I have. It's my children. I'm living for God, and I'm loving people. I'm loving them. It's my spouse. How can I live for you, God, right now? How can I submit my will to you, your will? What do you want to do in my wife's life today, Jesus? God, I'm kind of mad at her right now. How do I live out your love right now? It's like, actually, this is the thing that I think most Christians, we just hope that it'll magically happen. And we don't actually go to God in prayer about these things. Our prayer life tends to stick around, well, there's this person, they have this sickness and this sickness and this sickness. And that's not bad. Scripture even tells us to pray for people who are sick. But we don't take it to this deep level of like, God, my heart needs changing. Jesus, I need you right now to, in this, I'm so ticked at my wife. I'm not actually mad at my wife, so don't get concerned. But God, I need you right now because I don't know how to deal with this. Like, how do I deal with this anger? I have a real problem. How do I communicate? Actually taking that to him and dealing with it. Look, that's holiness is when we, every human interaction gets run through the filter of am I living for God and am I loving people? This is why it's our mission statement here. We're advancing the kingdom by living for God and loving people. Super simple. It tells you the story. So I need to tell you, I want to close by just telling you, they say, and there's a statistic that says 90% of the time when a pastor says he's going to close a sermon with a story that everybody will listen. So in closing, let me tell you the story. I want to tell you how this worked for me. When I first came to Christ, I was in high school, kind of mid, late high school. And some of you are like, well, that was a long time ago, Kent. And I thank you for thinking that, that I'm old. But it was a long time ago, but when I came to Christ, I had already lived a pretty terrible life. I was just a hoodlum, and I did all kinds of things that I should have gotten caught for and sent to juvie, and I never did. And I tell my kids all the time, Dad was a bad guy. You don't want to be like me. I had a buddy, this is just a quick example. I had a buddy that I hung out with quite a bit who one day, I wasn't with him, thankfully, but he walked up to another guy on the main street of the town that I lived in. He had a trench coat on. He had a shotgun underneath his coat, and he pulled it out and shot the guy in the knees, this other kid that we went to high school with. I went to hung out with that guy all the time. Like, just crazy. That was kind of the world that I lived in. And so when I came to Christ, I need you to know when I say that I was a bad guy, that my old life was terrible, it was terrible. I already by that age had a really bad thought life. And in the situation I want to tell you about real quickly, I normally would have been so judgmental. I would have been such a jerk. I would have joined in and gossiping and being malicious and mean. But all of a sudden, I had come to know Jesus. And I had taken off that old life. I had just taken it off. And I started to make my attitude new. I had started reading the words of Jesus over and over again. And I told you, when I started reading the Bible, I would highlight everything. Everything. All of a sudden, the truth was hitting me like a ton of bricks. And so I started doing that, and I put on the new life. I wanted to be like Jesus more than anything. And so I'm sitting in this class. It's world history with Howard Hendricks. He was our teacher, and Mr. Hendricks is up there. And he would, if he said something funny that he thought was funny, he'd go, well, I'll drink to that. And you didn't know if he had coffee in there or what he had, but he'd do it, and we'd all kind of giggle. And I'm sitting there. I'm sitting next to this cheerleader. And I just heard the gossip around school that she was pregnant. And I'm telling you, old Kent would have been gossiping, would have been malicious, making fun of her, trying to build my own social status by knocking her down, all that stuff. And all of a sudden, this is why I remember this so clearly, because it was so not me. I looked at her, and I almost started weeping in the middle of world history, because it hit me. I was like, God, how's she going to afford diapers? God, what is she going to do with a baby? I can't imagine having a baby at this age. God, what's she going to do? God, how's she going to be able to finish school? Oh, God, what if her family isn't there for her? And all of a sudden, like, all that old Kent was gone. And through the Holy Spirit, this is not a story about how great Kent is and he's this really good guy. It was about how the Spirit of God had worked inside of me and had transformed these little parts of me and is still transforming them, to where when I looked at that woman, all I saw her through was the lens of Jesus's lens. Like, it was like I'd taken off my glasses and put on his, and all I could see was what he saw now. And it changed everything. Listen, when Paul gives us these three things, when he says to take off your old life, make your attitude of your mind new, and put on the new self, he's giving you this roadmap back to you, back to who God intended you to be. It is as though he's saying, just put on Jesus' lens and see the world as he sees it. And I'm telling you, when you do that, oh, church, when you do that, holiness isn't a drag. It doesn't suck the air out of the room. Oh, if anything, it puts life into the room. It brings hope back into the room. It brings freedom and peace and joy and all the good things of the Spirit back into the room. So why are you running from this God? Why are you running from him? Did your old life offer those things to you? Did your old life give you peace? Did your old life give you freedom? Did your old life give you joy? Doubt it. And if it did, it was very fleeting. It was very fleeting. This morning, my hope is that some of you will turn back. You may have been a Christian for years, but you've been walking back in your old life more than your new. Actually, as I worked on the sermon and was practicing it, I realized there's this situation in my life where I've been walking in my old life again. And God was like knocking on my heart going, Kent, you need to put on the lenses again so you can see this situation as I see it. And I repented. I was literally working through my sermon notes last night, and I just repented. I was like, God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Maybe you need to just turn back around. Maybe you need to keep going. Maybe you're already in this life, and you've already put on the new self, and you just need to be encouraged. Keep doing what you're doing, and that's so good. But maybe for you, you need to, for the first time, turn to Jesus and say, I want peace. I want hope. I want joy. I want life. I'm telling you, it's free and it's available to you today. You don't have to wait. It's not even 1995. It's just free to you right now. In a few moments, we're going to worship and sing the song, Run to the Father. And I hope that some of you will run to the Father. And you'll just put on those new lenses, put on that new life, and see the world around you as Jesus sees it. You guys stand and worship. If you need to come and talk to somebody, if you need to come and make a decision, there will be several of us up here that you can come and talk to. This is your time to do some business with Jesus.